Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 4th of May. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
I am Charles Archer.
Happy Star Wars Day. Could you believe it? May the 4th be with you.
May the 4th be with you.
I mean, that's got to be one of the oldest, hasn't it? But how is the weather? I mean, the weather over here, it's just been scorchio.
It's so hot.
Hottest start to May. No, you're laugh, Kev. Kev, you laugh. It's been 30 degrees this week, which for May, I mean, it's the hottest start to May, right?
Yeah,
it's
ridiculous.
The British and the weather. It's either too cold.
No,
too
I'm not complaining. Hot. I love it. I'm in the summer shirt. I love it.
It's the humidity though, because this same temperature in the south of Europe is balmy and pleasant. It's the fact that like every water molecule of rain for the past 6 months is hanging around in the air. So you feel like you're walking through like a mildly heated swimming pool.
It's like when you go out of a hotel in Abu Dhabi in July or something, and it's just like you feel like you're swimming down the street. Yeah. It's just the humidity. No, but I mean, Kev, I think we checked the weather this week in somewhere like one of the places we go in Turkey in Kaz, and it was 15 degrees and raining. And we looked at the local app and it was 29 degrees in Newbury. And we're like, how can it be twice the Turkish, you know, the temperature? Yeah. It's been unbelievable. So, and you usually find that, right? When we have great weather up here at this crazy time of year in the southern, you know, parts of Spain, they have terrible weather conditions, right?
No, yeah. The other thing is,
the weather should be further south, but it actually stayed further north.
But we have this every year, Phil. I swear we have it every year. We have like 1 or maybe 2 weeks of like boiling hot sunshine. Summer. And this climate change, like everything's awful. Yeah. And then 3 days from now, it'll be pouring with rain all the way through to like late October. Yeah.
There'll be a hosepipe ban announced next week, and then it'll rain for 2 months continually.
No, the hosepipe ban has got more rain than pretty much any other country in the world. But, you know.
But it does seem to be that in the UK, you get a period of time in May that is always good.
Yeah.
Well, lockdown. Like, if you remember lockdown, Charles, like when it all started in sort of like big end of March, April, the whole of lockdown, all the way from like April right through to July, I think it was one of the hottest summers on record. It was remarkable. So it was really good. But let's have a quick look at the new news story that dominated the headlines this week. Obviously, on Wednesday, the US and the Ukraine signed the United States-Ukraine Reconstruction Investment Fund Agreement, granting the US preferential access to Ukraine's critical minerals like titanium, lithium and rare earths, essential for defense and technology sectors, while Ukraine retains ownership and co-manages the fund with equal contributions. The deal, finalized after tense negotiation marked by February 2025 Trump-Zelensky clash and reconciliatory Vatican meeting, allows future US military aid to count as fund contributions without requiring Ukraine to repay past aid, aiming to boost reconstruction and reduce US dependence on Chinese minerals, though challenges persist due to Russian occupied territories, war risks and skepticism about exploitation. So what do you think this deal means for Europe as well, and also where does it leave Russia in the mix?
I think, you know, it puts American interests in Ukraine, which is something Putin won't want, and possibly to help defend Ukraine in the future. But I think, very interestingly, Zelensky got a lot of concessions from America that, from the kind of public rhetoric that you saw a couple of months ago, you wouldn't think would have happened. But it's, you know, what it does mean is that sort of when Trump speaks and acts and puts stuff on Twitter, that's not what the administration is actually doing underneath the surface. In terms of for Europe, I mean, hopefully, I don't know. I mean, does this prolong the war? Or does it mean that when a peace is eventually settled, it will be lasting? I don't know. I think there's a temptation every 5 minutes there's something new and complex in the world, and you want to be an expert in everything. But maybe we just can't comment on this one. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, what it does is it redirects, I guess, Ukraine's critical mineral resources, titanium, lithium and rare earths, towards potential Western markets. Mm. And that will reduce Russia's influence, surely, over the, you know, as it asserts the region, as it seeks to dominate. Because I think this hasn't been thought through, has it? You know, some of these Ukrainian mineral deposits are already in Russian occupied territories, which is going to complicate the extraction. And, is that going to escalate tensions with Russia?
Well, I think the thing is that yes, there is a war, and yes, it is genuinely awful, awful on a humanitarian level. But when a peace is eventually signed, Russia and the Ukrainians, by and large, perhaps share a lot of share a lot of in common. So when the peace is signed, will there be mining with both nationalities occupying mine camps on near the borders? Of course, there will be. That's just the way it's going to be. And will there be cooperation between Russia and America and Ukraine to get minerals out of the ground? Probably. Because that's the nature of peace and peace deals. But obviously, at the moment, it's very the biggest complication more than anything else is that nobody knows where the land border of Ukraine and Russia will be until the peace deal is signed, and whether that's going to be next month or in 10 years' time. So.
I think it's just a political maneuver to one, save face for Trump, and two, that it gives Ukraine a bit of a better position in negotiations. And I don't think it means jack, to be honest. The whole thing.
Okay. Who was ousted this week, Norm?
I'm going
Well,
to
I'll
go
give you a
with
clue. I'll give you a clue.
the Emperor.
Mike Waltz has left the chat.
Yes.
Yeah, so this was basically Trump's national security advisor, and he was ousted from his position. Do you hear what he did? What happened?
What zany thing did he do? I can't
Well, he
remember.
basically had something called the Signalgate scandal, where Waltz, he inadvertently included an
Oh,
editor
yeah.
in chief, Jeffrey Goldberg, in a effectively like a WhatsApp or Signal group chat discussing sensitive US military plans for a strike on Houthi targets in Yemen, which was obviously leaked to the national press ahead of any strike. So he was kicked out eventually. I think Trump supported him, but then eventually it resulted in the Mike Waltz has left the chat message in the Signal group. So that one signal that. But I think we've talked enough. I think let's move on to our first guest this week. We're thrilled to be joined once again by Charles Bray, Executive Chairman at Vaterian PLC, the LSE listed critical metals exploration and development company making waves in Africa. Welcome back to the Rose, Charles.
Thank you for having me. It's always good to be here to talk to you, gents.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, obviously, we just talked at the top of the show about the United States Ukraine Reconstruction Investment Fund agreement, which was signed this week. What are your thoughts on the whole weaponization of critical minerals? We've seen the trade tariffs in the US and obviously Chinese export bans on not only rare earths but other critical metals. And you've been into trading for many years now. How will these things potentially affect companies like Aterian in positive and potentially negative ways?
Yeah, I think that's the final comment you made, in that it'll be pod there'll be lots of positive, lots of negative. I think that's the most true thing stated. I don't necessarily agree with the approach. I'm going to start with that. I agree that something needs to be done. In other words, we have to start to move critical mineral refining processing away from places like China and have it more widely distributed. In particular, I like to see it across Africa, and in particular, let's start with Rwanda. But that being said, I understand the rationale and the motivation that is leading people, at least in the Trump administration, to undertake these actions. What I disagree with is the approach and how. I think that, there are natural allies to the United States that need to be accommodated for the fact that they have been allies and supporters and members of various multinational organizations over the course of many decades, and ran to the aid of the United States on multiple occasions in the past. And that needs to be respected, and we can work hand in hand in partnership, and I think get a lot more done through collaboration as opposed to these more punitive approaches, or in the case of Ukraine, something that feels a bit more like strong arming, or there's other words I could use, but you get the point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what are your thoughts on the whole deal? It felt like it wasn't going to be signed. The Putin's been kind of like stalling for time. We've obviously seen this deal signed, which are kind of like the makeup of the deal is almost like, it's effectively a joint agreement. They're going to form some sort of fund. Money's going to go into it for 10 years, which is going to help rebuild the Ukraine before US takes any. But do you think, did you ever expect something like that to be signed? Obviously, we don't know the security agreements around it in terms of how Russia's going to respond, if there's going to be US staff on the ground there. Is it going to act as a kind of some sort of buffer that prevent any further attacks on Ukraine? But how do you think you can manage a deal like this?
I'm not so sure that it can be managed. And so I'm not so sure it will be be fully implemented. I think what's important is that it was signed. And I think that's the key point. I think Zelensky recognized that he had to give the Trump administration something. And so, from a geopolitical standpoint, this allows the president to make nice with Ukraine and Ukrainian government. And so ultimately, we'll see if there are economically viable deposits in Ukraine that would allow for this to be fully implemented as opposed to just on paper.
Yeah,
I'm not so
absolutely. I
sure
mean,
that's the case.
yeah, I mean, so they're saying that quite a lot of these Ukraine mineral deposits are actually in current Russian occupied territories, which is going to complicate the extraction process. It just feels like it hasn't been thought through massively. But yeah, it's
And
a
I
very
think a
interesting.
few of them are at depth and in not necessarily the as you mentioned, the not the nicest neighborhoods. And so I think there's going to be some costing in terms of feasibility studies. I think there's going to be a lot of work that is going to need to be done. And so I'm not so sure how much will be implemented.
But is it not more of just a pretext to have American interests in Ukraine once the war is over? You know, if you can say, well, we've got, mining interests along whatever the, wherever the line is drawn, that then deters Putin from invading again because then he's directly attacking American interests. I think that's it's not really about the minerals so much. It's more about that defensive line. And I suspect what you'll find, my imagining is that when peace is eventually declared, those American interests will all be right on the border. That would be my guess,
I think that's a good take, a very good take.
But then it's the same, and it's the same in America. US Trump wants Greenland, where there's a few companies up there that I cover. Yes, ostensibly for mineral rights, and those are very important, especially the rare earths, but also because of the geopolitical status of Greenland. The world warms up, suddenly those shipping lanes are incredibly valuable and important. And he wants Canada as well, but I'm not sure that's going to happen. I think he's just a bit mental for.
I mean, I can state on behalf of all my Canadian friends that will never happen. Oh, dear.
Charles,
Well, yes.
what is your take on the first 100 days of Trumponomics?
It's worse than anything I could have expected. I think the tariffs have been an unmitigated disaster. I think. Again, it's again, please, I just want to make sure your audience understands and everybody understands from a policy standpoint, it's not the rebalancing of global trade with respect to the United States and its various trade partners is something that needs to happen. China and the United States have some fundamental issues that need to be addressed. They are not always going to be friendly issues. There's going to be a fair bit of antagonism. But all of this needs to be negotiated in one way or form or another. However, I think that the tariffs and the implementation of 10% tariffs alone is decoupling the United States from the world trade order. And I think it's an incredibly costly way to implement something that could have been done with a very thoughtful process that involved analysis and ended up allowing and understanding that services weren't included in some of those calculations but are important. And so you end up with countries like the UK who is effectively being penalized for being a good partner. And it just makes no sense.
It doesn't. I mean, the services thing is really important because services aren't counted for import export. And so, people think, oh, well, I don't actually buy anything from the US and the UK. The UK-US relationship, like 70% of exports from the UK to the US is gold. That's a fact. So the gold price, well, I was trying to do the math the other day. How high does the gold price has to go before that trade balance imbalance goes? And then suddenly there's no justification for UK tariffs. But the other thing is, what American products do you use every day? They're not physical products, they're services. Microsoft Word, Apple software, Google Chrome, for example, ChatGPT. We use these services, most of us will use them every day now, and yet they're not counted. And so you have this situation where American tech dominance isn't considered by Donald Trump to be important in terms of the tariffs, and neither is the central status of the US dollar as the world's reserve currency. So he's a madman playing around with world politics, and it probably won't end well for the country in the end. But I guess we'll see.
I couldn't agree more. I had an interesting dinner with a Hong Kong-based high net worth manager who has a client who has a shoe factory that was selling in excess of 100 billion pairs of shoes into the United States. And what he was telling me was those shoes were selling for approximately $6 a pair. Ultimately, the average retail price on those shoes was somewhere between $50 and $60 a pair. But of that $50 to $60, there was about $10, $15 a margin. And the rest was covered up with things like services, payments made to, for the buyer, rent,
Yeah, exactly.
advertising, accountancy, software, distribution, marketing, all of those services which are US-centered. So to impact on, to try to influence $6 worth of trade, he's impacting $30 to $40 worth of US service GDP. So we'll see what's going to happen.
I think a good analogy is, you know, Christmas when you get those almonds that you can't open, and you try and use a nutcracker, but instead he got a sledgehammer and put them all on the table. The problem is he broke the table as well, and then he broke the tiles under the table as well, and that's what's happened. Your analogy is a very good one. I was speaking to people this week in America, and they are struggling to pay the bills. They are struggling to buy food. I think there is already a recession in the US, so if anybody says there isn't, they're lying. I think there's already a recession, but the rest of the world has decided in their wisdom now that we can't deal with this, because you can't deal with someone who wants to bully you into a situation. So what do? You stop trading with them. And I think that's what's going to happen, and already has started to happen. I
Because if
mean,
you don't stop, you reduce it or you limit it and you make it as small as you can.
But the other thing that occurred to me as well when I was thinking about it was this: Trump's end game was produce it in America. Okay. Why on earth would you consider investing billions of dollars in making it in America when it's quite obvious he said this is the way I want it to be, and now he's coming back and saying, wait a minute, we'll have to change it? There is no possibility you can make a decision based on those factors. If you're running a business, there's so much instability that you can't make that decision. So I think if anything, he's pushed people away rather than pushing people to go and create things in America.
Okay, well, should we talk Criterion, Charles?
Yes, please.
Yeah, obviously. So since you
Charles is
last,
like, no
this
more
is a question. How's
is
it? This is literally
Perfect.
the first question.
Yeah.
How are things going? They're all right. Okay, done. Back to
Yeah.
world politics.
Yeah, back to politics. Now we've put the world to rights. Yeah, I mean, obviously, since you last joined us, Charles, Aterian has dropped two significant news announcements that we're going to dive into today. First up, we've got the game-changing $4.5 million trade finance agreement announced on the 23rd of April, a deal with a global commodity trading house to supercharge Aterian's mineral trading operations in Rwanda through its subsidiary East Inco Limited. This facility is all about scaling up trading of tantalum, niobium, and cassiterite with minimal upfront capital, paving the way for self-sustaining revenue to fuel Aterian's exploration ambitions. Then we'll cover the £468,000 convertible bond raise, which is powering exploration across your exciting portfolio, Morocco, Botswana, and Rwanda. Charles, let's kick things off with this $4.5 million trade finance deal. What does this mean for Aterian's strategy, and how's it transforming your operations in Rwanda?
I think it's utterly transformed our operations. I think up until now, late last year, we started trading. The idea then was to engage with suppliers and test a lot of our systems. And we were able to do that. But what we could tell very quickly was that without an increased or enlarged facility, trade facility, we weren't going to be able to scale. And that's the critical point. You want to have a container out on the water at any one time, and you want to be buying more product and get another container out and buying more product and get another container out. And we were kind of stuck the old and waiting for it to land for us to get paid and utterly dependent on someone else. And so this facility allows us a lot of freedom to buy. We can hold. I mean, it has that amount of flexibility. If we just think it's something's cheap, we can just buy, a couple $1 million of it and hold it. But that's not what it's for. What it's really for is to aggregate material from small scale miners, take advantage of the facility itself, and recognize there's only a few people in country in Rwanda who have the financial wherewithal to be able to buy a couple containers of material. And so that is what really allows for that margin to creep in, because we're able to acquire more and hold. And we're not people who need capital are going to need to sell. And sometimes that creates a tremendous opportunity. And by tremendous, I'm talking instead of 5%, 10% margin. So, and that's what we're looking to take advantage of. And this facility allows us to do that. So we're very excited about it. And what we're hoping is that, I mean, we've already started in terms of the new trading operations. I mean, I should say under the facility, it's the same operational group, but with the new facility. And we're really excited that we're also able to broaden the range of products. So beyond coltan, we can get into cassiterite. And because cassiterite is a natural byproduct of coltan mining, we end up with it. And previously, what we would do is effectively just sell it as quick as we could to get the capital back. And we were selling it at market, not making it. I think net over the course of, the 3 months we traded that little bit of cassiterite, I think we made about 10 cents on average. So it was, and that's just random. We could have lost that same amount or twice that amount. Yeah, it just happened to be that way. So yeah, we're excited about the prospect of trading and scaling it and allowing it to generate the type of income that we believe will drive a hybrid business model, so that we have an income generating portion of the company that's covering the cost, and an exploration part of the company that is basically a series of upside options that we can look to advance for shareholders.
In terms of the exploration then, which hopefully you're hoping to get funded through the trading and profits, because you've got Botswana and Morocco. So in Botswana, the field work has started in the Kalahari Copperbelt, hasn't it? And then, lithium brine exploration in the basin. And then
Yes.
in Morocco, you've got four projects: copper, silver, gold, Azrar, Ags, and Jubilee Est. And then the active joint venture you have with Rio Tinto, which is still progressing in Rwanda as well, presumably.
Yes, it's progressing. What's been delayed, and this is not down to us, I'm going to throw it all the blame on Rio Tinto, is we have not received the results back. And we were expecting them back. Actually, Rio Tinto was expecting them back some time ago. We had a call with them earlier this week, and they were saying, look, it's imminent. There's been a tremendous.
No, with that word is banned from the market, the
If you're
word
listening,
imminent.
Rio, get them. Please be in contact with them.
Well, I think
Please.
it's come on. Look, when you sign a joint venture with a major, there's loads of upsides and loads of positives. One of the negatives is they do not work to your timeline. You'll
They do
get the
not work to our
results,
timeline.
you'll get the results when they're good and ready. And that
Yes.
same is true across pretty much every joint venture with a junior I've ever seen. And you just kind of have to sit there and accept it, and that's life. But the plus side is they pay for the drilling and the
Yes.
exploration. So you can't really
Yes.
complain, can you?
No, we cannot. And the other point is, we have a different sort of our risk return to this is obviously, as you just pointed out, they've paid for the drilling. The last I looked, the spend on the project to date was over $4 million. So they're going to be disappointed. I think I might have mentioned before, their sort of numbers is 40 million tons. I'm not going to mention a cutoff, but I'm going to presume it's something because they haven't stated one categorically. But if it's 30 million tons, I'm sure they'd be thrilled and happy with that. 50 million is even better. Our cutoff is more like 5 to 10. So there's a lot more room for us to obtain value from this whole transaction. And even if there's no lithium, which we seriously doubt, we believe there's going to be some spodumene intersections, we still have a tremendous amount of pegmatite that, as far as we can tell from the artisanal mining, has a lot of tantalum and cassiterite as potential upside. So for us, it's a different sort of analysis once these drill results come back. And
I
that's why we're
guess
looking forward to sharing them.
the other thing is obviously the lithium market is incredibly depressed, but there's two ways this can go. The common way is the major does a load of exploration. It doesn't find the jackpot because it is uncommon, but then you have maybe a mid-tier resource. The lithium market picks up in a couple of years, and then suddenly you're away. Alternatively, they do find a jackpot, and then everyone's rich and we walk away, and that's fantastic too. But I think the important thing is, especially that there always seems to be this kind of this narrative when a major comes on board, that if you don't find, a tier one deposit, then it's a disaster. That's not the case, is it? It's if you find
Not in the
something,
slightest.
for your market capitalization, anything is very good. So fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, you're ultimately, Charles, if they hit the jackpot, as you said, and let's say it's 50 million tons, the scenario is you're going to get 30% of that, maybe. Okay. So you're maybe going to get 10 to 15 million tons. So as you say, if they walk away, and you end up with an asset that has 10 million to 15 million tons, is it any different?
We're in control. So,
Yeah, you have 100%, and then you can decide how it all works out.
So there's a slight difference. I'm not going to say it's better on a podcast and have Rio Tinto's chief exploration geologist hear it and ask me what was I talking about, but you can conclude what we think is better.
I mean, the scenario is that the trading side of things, we visited this a year and a half ago now. You are now in a situation where I just want to be clear, the trading now, you're putting the trading on the sea, or are you trading within Kigali as well?
It's now focused on, whereas previously it was within Kigali. So all of last year, not the majority of last year's trading was internal. And by that, I mean local. Whereas now it's exclusively international, cross-border.
Okay, so because of this loan, not loan, this
Yeah,
facility,
absolutely.
you're able to ensure these cargoes as they go. People have to pay proportion of them as they leave, or how does that work? Or are you not
It
allowed to do this?
depends on the buyer. Overall, what I can say is the terms are generally the same, whether they're paying, there's a partial payment up front. But generally speaking, we're getting paid when the ship arrives in China at the port. So as soon as so CIF China is the way to think about it.
Okay, and from the perspective of this 4.5 million US dollars, if you were going to be happy, how many times do you expect this 4.5 million dollars to turn over in a 12-month period?
That's hard to answer because the way at least we've modeled it, we hope to hit the limit of that 4.5 million in month 9, something like that, month 10, perhaps. So it's hard to describe it turning over because it's perpetually in use is a better way to describe it. So it kind of the question is it looks like if you look at the utilization graph, it kind of peaks in, like I said, in 9 months, it kind of drops off down to 3.5 million, and it then peaks again, and it kind of oscillates like that. And at that point, if it's constantly trending upward and things are going well, we're going to look to increase it.
Okay, so I suppose really I was trying to subtly find out how much money do you think you're going to make from the trade, and as you can tell. Which you now give me a big smile and a big laugh because you're not going to tell me. But
But what
are we
our
talking
objective,
about trying
our
to make
objective.
at least 10% of the thing per annum or more or
Oh,
what?
it's more than 10%. That I shouldn't say that. And here again, we get back to the scaling up, right? Because we have gone out to potential sellers and told them, look, we're now looking to engage. We want you to sell to us. They're saying, well, I sell to these other two people. We say, well, you can sell to us as well, or you can just sell to us. And that takes time to get to convince people. We have our core group who we work with, and that's going very well. That's fine. There's no issue. But we're looking to expand that, and that takes a bit of time, and it takes spending some money with people and letting them know that, we may never have done this trade before, but we're here now. We're willing to do it with you, and we'd like to keep it going on a regular basis.
And that was some of the artisanal miners that we visited when we were in Rwanda with you. You know, because there is quite a network, and the two guys who are running it have sort of a very, very good local knowledge of all the different artisanal miners within Rwanda.
They do. So that's
And
what we're, you know, we're using that as best we can. And the plan is to utilize that network to expand to get to those numbers I was mentioning before, where with containers at a time out on the open seas.
Those guys now happy
Oh
that
yeah.
things are moving?
Yeah, they're
Because
very happy.
remember at that time, like it was twiddling thumbs time, they were not happy.
There was a long, long period of traceability and compliance checks, and they did not like the paperwork. They wanted to be out there buying and selling and trading, and we had them in the office basically generating OECD guideline policies and reports, and they hated us for it, but it was very necessary.
So, from the perspective of you buying, are you still on the process of buying and upgrading to make a margin, as well as obviously the margin you're getting for selling the product?
Yes, it depends on the seller. So there's two or three sellers we work with who have no capability to upgrade. They effectively are just washing out ore and delivering it to us. And so we're upgrading it, mostly removing iron oxide. We're separating it and then looking to sell it. Whereas there's others who actually, for whatever reason, have very much better processing equipment. And then just come to us with coltan, and it's already meeting international specifications. And so, for our sake, it's more about making sure we understand the assay, what it looks like, and do we want to add it into the mix that we call our brand because we have certain specification that we meet. And so, our refiners are expecting it to be a certain type of coltan.
How is it going now that you've been in Rwanda now for a few years now? So how is the in-country situation going in terms of, you know,
Yeah,
your
there's.
ability to get other stuff? And I mean, there's no doubt that this is a rich country in terms of resources. You know, there's not just one lithium, and Rio Tinto did not just come into Rwanda for your situation.
No, not just because of us. We find that it's what I think what the way to the best way to answer that is the trading operations allowing us to get out in the country, to visit different parts of the country, and to do what I call exploration from afar. So we're able to visit these mine sites, kind of look around, see what's on the ground, check out the geology, check out some of the mineralogy, understand, take assays of the various material. And we're able to do that across the entire country now. And we're able to do it on sites that are licensed that allow for exploration or mining. So it just happens not to be our license or our mine. But that then gives us a tremendous amount of information. And we're then now, so we're gathering that and building up a database of what the whole country looks like. And what I can say is this is a mineral-rich country that is a destination unto itself that has been overlooked for many, many years. And we're gaining a much better knowledge. And of course, every place is different and unique, but we're learning a tremendous amount. And what's important is that we take that asset and over time develop it into something that's valuable for the shareholders.
Yeah, because I remember when we were discussing it, sort of when we were in Rwanda, that, you know, there hopefully will be the opportunity for you to actually either take over or partner with some of these small miners, so that effectively you had a resource yourself within Rwanda in terms of the coltan and any other assets.
I mean, in terms of our strategic thinking, 2025 is a big year for us because not only have we signed the trading facility, but from a collaboration standpoint, it's important for us to generate a few partnerships. And this year, we kind of, I don't want to say have it scheduled, but we're lining up the ability to do a partnership in Rwanda. We're lining up the ability to do at least one in Morocco. Ideally, it'll be two. And then there's the KCB, the Kalahari Copper Belt, which has a tremendous amount of activity going on right now. And so we're hopeful that by year end 2025, we might even be able to squeeze in an announcement about a partnership there. So for us, it's all about these collaborations and building these. Well, some people are starting to describe us as a project generation company. It's not so much that, it's borderline. But the fact of the matter is, we've advanced some of these exploration assets to the point where they deserve to have a partner who can spend several million dollars to take it further. And we want to find those people, and we want to create some real value for our shareholders on the back of that.
Yeah, I think Kev's nailed it there. I mean, it's like the final piece of the puzzle, the jigsaw, isn't it? You've got the finance agreement in place, you've got the comptoir, the ability to process and get these minerals to export them, and all you need now is a resource that you can shore up yourself in Rwanda, in the country, and then you've got the final piece there, and you've got the whole gamut.
And
And
so,
you've ultimately got a free hit with the Rio Tinto. I think anybody should not underestimate that, there is almost certainly, I mean, I know you can't say it, but there is almost certainly a lithium deposit there. It's just a case of how much is that lithium deposit?
how big?
I mean, we saw the geology of it that had been washed out higher up on the hill. So it's there. Physically, it's not going to suddenly disappear, 40 meters lower, if you like. So you now have a free hit. Which way it goes, nobody knows. That
Let's see.
rhymes.
Well, we
I'm a
will
poet and I
shortly.
don't know it. But yeah, you will see over the next month or two, hopefully Rio's going to come back and say, this is it. But regardless of that, Rio are going to spend some more money, I would imagine. It's not going to stop here.
I cannot answer for Rio Tinto. I can't say. But what I can say is, the spend so far has been in excess of $4 million, which we feel is it was higher than we had anticipated. Let's put it that way.
A significant amount. I was going to ask you, Charles, give us, what can listeners look forward to over the next course of the next 6 months? I mean, you've just kind of alluded to quite a lot of what's going to, what potentially can, but what are you hoping to achieve with Aterian in the next 6 to 8 months?
I think exactly, just to repeat myself, ideally we have an announcement on two to three different partnerships. Now, those could be relatively small. With it could be as something as small as a partnership with a mining company in Rwanda, which by definition they're all small, except for Rio Tinto, or it could be something quite considerable. And there, I'd expect an announcement in Morocco and/or Botswana in the KCB. So that's our focus, and that's what we're going to be working on diligently over the next few months.
So you have three children. You have Morocco, you have Botswana, and you have Rwanda. Which is your favorite child?
Just like at home, they're all unique and special in their own way.
That's not an answer, Charles.
I know it's not an answer. What I'm really hopeful is that I have a, let me put it this way. I really enjoyed my time in Botswana. I was impressed with everything, but the scale of the licenses we have there and the activity going on around us, whether it's Cobra, Kavango, Rio Tinto, MMC, there's a tremendous amount of activity happening there in that Kalahari Copper Belt. And they're finding considerable scaled resources. It's just under 50 meters of sand cover, which to me is crazy because as you know, when we were in Morocco, you can see the mineralization on the ground. And so it seems a little harder, but it's definitely proven. And so the market likes something that already has, someone's already been there and already done it. And that's going to have to be the case, I suspect, with us in Morocco. So I like them both, though.
But the interesting thing is about Botswana, it's, as you say, it is a copper belt. So it doesn't sort of stop and start and stop and start and stop and start. It is a belt of copper that has given itself an intrusion through the ground. So if you have ground there, there's a fairly large likelihood that there's copper there.
Absolutely. It's more a question of the extent of it. And so both of these are the Kalahari Copper Belt is a sedimentary deposit, as in Morocco. And so what we see is, at least in Morocco, one of the strike lengths we have is about 34 kilometers, the other is in the high 20s. These are considerable areas of copper deposit, and it's all about identifying and finding those concentrations where there's folding and the right sort of inclinations, and so where you get the 1 to 2% deposits at time.
So Simon's in his element.
Simon is definitely excited and happy. He's been working hard with the country managers, and yeah, we're gonna have a couple trips scheduled to visit some of these sites shortly.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. I think with, and I mean, I was bashing this with you 2 years ago, but with the trading now in place and now functioning, you now do have exactly as you defined it, a hybrid company that will have revenues, cash that it can use on an ongoing basis, and then subsequently upside with others spending large amounts of money on your assets that you've collated. So yeah, it now really does look it's time for Ethereum.
Good. Okay. Well, on that note, we'll say Charles Bray, Executive Chairman of Ethereum. Thanks very much for appearing back on the roast.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to coming back again.
Okay, so should we go into the 12 reviews, Kev?
Yeah, let's what was on our radar at the end of December, start of January. Let's have a review of what it's been 4 months now. Let's see where we're at.
So we're going to review our 12 stocks for 2025, as Kev said, that we effectively it's a quick roundup of where we are since the start of the year, where we kind of chose our 12 for 2025. Starting with you, Kev, I'm going to give you 90 seconds to give us an update on your first stock going in now.
Okay, so the first one that I covered was Power Metal Resources. From a performance point of view, hasn't done particularly wonderful, hasn't done particularly bad either. I think it's somewhere in the region of a few percent down from where it was. What has happened? Well, in that 4 month period, they've sold a good chunk of the Guardian Metal Resources. They're now completely cashed up. They have the uranium assets that are progressing in Canada. They also are working on the stuff in the Middle East, specifically, I think, Saudi Arabia. And now it's a completely cashed up thing with still 20-odd percent of the Guardian Metal Resources. So still very positive on it. The share price hasn't reacted at all, but that's the way the market has worked, I think. But still very happy holding it, and I think we'll hold it for the rest of the year.
Oh, okay. My first stock is the Guardian Metal Resources, which I know Kev just alluded to. This year, I think probably there's two big things. The share price has gone up about 20, 30%. It was much higher a month or two ago, but you've got a lot of warrant conversions, which has dropped the share price a little bit, but also has left the company very well cashed up and very well financialized. The big thing for me, I mean, very recently, Tenpayut, which is their secondary flagship asset, they just doubled the footprint there, and I imagine they're looking around the assets at stake even more. And Tenpayut it'll be ready to go if you get the funding in there, built, to get tungsten, domestic tungsten production going in the US for the first time in decades. They could probably get cracking within 18 months to 2 years. Obviously, you have ACAM on board as well. Having Bacon and Leslie is really, really important. These people don't bet on losers. You look at the share price returns over the past sort of year or two, and you can see how well Guardian's been doing. But the bigger and probably the most important thing is, in terms of for shareholders, for the share price to rise, to rocket, is going to be grant funding. We have the publicized slides from US, one of the sectors of the US Department of Defense, which tells us that that grant funding should have come in towards the end of Q1. We haven't had it yet, but I'm not panicking because if you look at the DFC, if you look at the DoD, with Trump in charge, everyone's had to sort of realign their sights. So other grants have been a couple of months late. So I'd imagine Guardians will be the same. So my official prediction is that grant funding is going to come in this quarter. And when it does, the share price will go to a new record high. And then we'll be happy. Fine.
Yeah, and that should influence Power Metal as well at the same time. So let's hope that the two will rocket together.
Yep. I'm going to go on to my first one. I've got Cobra Resources. They've made significant progress at the Bolan project in South Australia, obviously focusing on the ionic rare earth elements, the REE discovery. They recommenced or recommenced the air core drilling in January, which I think they completed circa 20 holes around 1,000 meters before Christmas. And then they're aiming for 40 more in January to support a maiden REE resource. Stage one drilling, part of that, I think it was fully funded 12,000 meters, four stage. Targeting geological definition for the in-situ recovery mining. Basically, they also reevaluate the Wudinna Gold Project as well, which I think had a resource estimate of around 279,000 ounces of shallow jork gold resource. And obviously, in light of gold price rises as well, they also talked about did some recent metallurgical work on Bolan's rare earth, and basically follow-up testing is now targeting a selective enriched revenant of high-value REEs and baseline data collection. And they also started on their basically drilling basic yeah
That
sorry
one's been up about 6 or 7%, and dependent on, when you buy, when you sell, but hasn't moved great, but it's got to be in the right place at the right time, you would imagine.
Yeah, what's it trading at now, Kev?
When we took the screenshot, it was 122.
Okay,
So
yeah.
yeah, up 6 or 7%. Okay, so my next one has been the best performer overall as well, which was Greatland Gold. Maybe it's no shock to anybody. As we said when we recorded this last year, Greatland didn't do that well. It was down, I think, 20 odd percent, but this year up over 100%. I think it's 110% from when we said it. I think we probably all would have picked this one if the truth be known. So
Maybe
the gold
we're all major
prices,
shareholders in this one.
yeah, the gold prices obviously had a big positive in it. But I think more importantly, I think Rick Rule said this, was that they're going about this in a very strategic way. Telfer is obviously being pushed more and more and more in terms of an extension of the ability to get more and more gold out of Telfer before Havieron comes online in 2027. So yeah, and I think the big catalyst is going to be the ASX listing. I think once that comes in, and has to be a lot of buying, it should go even higher, I think. I mean, I think it has reached 15 or 16p on the basis that I think some of the GDXJ, is it, or some of the companies had to buy in, and I think they're going to have to do that again. So yeah, let's see where it goes.
Cool. My second stock is Amaroq Minerals. The share price has been all over the place in 2025, but that's what happens when you start up production. Nobody quite knows where it's going to go. I mean, it was we're down sort of 20% year to date, but for perspective, we started the year about £1. It rose to £1.20 by mid-January, fell to as low as 75p. On the 8th of April, now we're in sort of 85p each ish. So it is jumping around all over the place. And it kind of makes sense when you think about it because you've got a nuggety gold deposit. The gold is being produced, they are producing. You're going to have the first quarter production figures are going to come out this month. I imagine they won't blow anybody out of the water because they're still in the commissioning stage. But by the end of the year, we should be processing 300 tons per day through the unit. And that can be upgraded to 450 probably by maybe this time next year. So you're going to be making serious cash flow from Amaroq. And I imagine that, these are picks for the entire year. I imagine that the share price will recover and then go to new highs by the end of the year. For poor context, we had the mineral resource update. Contained gold increased by more than 50% to 484,000 ounces. And this is one of the highest grade gold mines in the world. So yes, there's a lot of you're going to have the share price bounce up and down a lot, and there's going to be a lot more volatility. But by the end of the year, I think we'll be at new record highs. So I'm not particularly concerned about this one going down a little bit now. I do think it's on sale, and I think it's going to be a very by this the end of the year we'll all be very happy. But yeah, good.
Very good. Well, staying on the Greenland theme, second one is Greenrock Strategic Materials. Obviously, they're focusing on the flagship Mitsot graphite project in southern Greenland, which is one of the world's highest grade graphite deposits, with a JORC resource of 23.05 million tons at 20% graphite. Basically, in since January, they've received a letter of interest from Denmark's Export and Investment Fund, the EIFO, for funding the Amersoq Graphite project. In February, they raised £735,000 via placing and subscription with one-for-two warrants. Notable participants include a £500,000 commitment from a new institutional investor. ESG, they received a BB rating in its first ESG assessment by Digbee, marking a solid initial benchmark. And then technical development, they engaged ProGraphite Germany to run extended purification tests on the Amersoq graphite to optimize processing techniques. Seeking capital, obviously, in 2025 to fund a pre-feasibility study for Amersoq and establish a pilot active anode materials plant in Norway. And then also leveraging the EU Greenland Critical Minerals Partnership positions Amersoq as a potential strategic project under the EU's Critical Raw Materials Act. So yeah, it's exciting. I think GreenRoc has actually moved quite well, hasn't it, in the last sort of couple of months from the 2p mark up to the 3p. It's done pretty well, really.
Well, I think it's the strategic project strategic status is what people are hoping for. We have the European based ones, and was it April when they came out, when they were announced? And then now you have the CEO, who is a very good chap and put a lot of his own money into GreenRoc. He's saying, you know, that potentially this quarter we're going to have the non-EU projects are going to get announced. So if one of them happens to be GreenRoc's Amersoq, which I think is a very good chance, then you might see a very strong share price move again.
Yeah, it's done good, 100%. Well done, Phil. Good choice. My next one was MAST. They've made a lot of progress again this year. Share price is up around 20%. Powertree deal signed a few weeks ago, still to be confirmed. But when that is confirmed, I think then you've got two routes. You've got Pybridge bringing in money, which we've regularly seen the revenue coming from it. It's around 24, 25,000 pounds per megawatt. We've had two of the gensets upgraded or renewed. And yeah, I can only see that we've got a more stable company, and yet it hasn't really reflected in the share price yet. You've got a market cap of 875,000 pounds, which is crazy small. So if this actually stabilizes and moves up, you know, it could be a really big mover. Still a few things to stabilize, but once those things are done, I think there was news this last week about different spreads and one of the other betting companies, if you like, that were out now. So
I think that the problem with that stock in terms of the share price movement has been that every time there's been some great news on those like monthly, which has been, you know, every time at Pybridge there's been announcements, it's been like a new high, hasn't it, in terms of like the embedded benefits and the actual amount per megawatt hour. So it's really performed exceptionally well as Pybridge. But there's always been selling. It's almost like, I think it was Cantor Fitzgerald, wasn't it, that they've talked about in the past, as you say, on the RNSs and Spreadex. It's almost like there's a seller that needs to get out, and it's just decimated the share price.
Yeah, but I think those sellers are pretty much out now. So now might be the opportunity, because I don't think it'd be a big ask to turn that into a 2-3 million pound market capitalization company. And it's probably worth it now that they're going to be moving forward with all the different angles they've got. And as we saw this week with Spain and Portugal, you know, we need these gas peaking stations. Like, we do need them. So yeah, there you go. That's my third choice.
Okay, I'll go next again. My third one is Rome Resources, which, you know, I'm glad that we waited until now to review, because it's kind of maybe shame isn't right, but when you're in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the big risk is political and jurisdictional risk, as always. M23 rebels, supported by Rwanda, came in. Rome effectively, with AlphaMin next door, had to abandon the site for a short while. They're now back, they're now drilling. We had a ceasefire and a peace deal was being agreed. So, you know, everything, it seems to be going, you know, back to normal-ish. The share price has recovered a fair bit as well. We are still down, I know, like 20, 30% or whatever it is since the start of the year. But I'm not particularly concerned, because this is an exploration play. So if the tin slash copper is there, which they're now drilling at depths to, then we're going to see, you know, a re-rate and a decent rise in the share price. And bear in mind that, you know, their flagship asset, Busy North, is just north of Busy, which is the world's largest, highest grade tin mine. And they are proving up the model. We haven't had spectacular grades yet. Yeah, we haven't had spectacular lengths yet, but these should be seen in the assays coming out in the summer, in this future drilling that we're about to do, which is all fully funded at a strategic placing, which is placed at 0.35p. So yeah, I mean, I'm quite happy. I'm quite happy with the performance of Rome, given the regional volatility and the rebels. But the rebels are now away and they're gone. And now we just have to sit back and wait and cross our fingers and hope for the exploration to come back. But I do think it's one of the better exploration plays on the market at the moment, and with one of the best management teams. So I guess we'll see.
Very good.
Again, it tells you about the risk of the place, if you like, rather than actual the asset, because I don't think there's any doubt the asset's going to be good. But the issue is, will we get the valuation because of DCR basically
Well,
gone?
I think it's with the Americans doing a deal, Minerals for Security, right, with the DRC, which seems to definitely be happening, with the international pressure of China, America, and Saudi Arabia, as well as Rwanda, to stop M23 and the rebels. You're possibly going to have significantly more security. And the Manono lithium mine, which is relatively close by, if that gets developed, and that's the largest lithium mine in the world, the largest lithium deposit in the world, you'll have a place where you've got the largest lithium deposit and the largest tin deposit, right, very close to each other, with the US and China moderating the region to make sure that we don't have rebel hostilities again. If it was in Western Australia, then this exploration asset would probably be worth five times as much. So I think, a lot of that regional risk is priced into it. I generally avoid the DRC, but because the chairman at Rome is Klaus Eckhoff, and because Klaus found Manono and found Busy, I'm a lot less stressed about it, because he seems to be able to manage the political risk very well and has done for decades. So I guess we'll see.
Good stuff. Yeah, moving on to my third one, Sovereign Metals. I think most people will know the story there. If they don't, they've probably been under a rock. But basically, strong progress in March 25 quarter report, which highlighted the completion of the optimized pre-feasibility study for Cassia. Global significant as a major low-cost producer of natural rutile and graphite. They also did they perform the rehabilitation of the Cassia test pit. That was all done, allowed the local landowners to resume farming without disruption, not just putting back to as it was, but make better. Test work showed Cassia graphite obviously meets the specification for over 94% of global flake graphite demand, with plans to produce 96% concentrate at a competitive cost. Obviously, the investigations are ongoing. Geotechnical for the definitive feasibility study, they're well underway, with completion targeted for the latter part of 2025 Q4. And obviously, the June quarter is going to focus on advancing the DFS, which is updating the mineral resource estimate and progressive graphite offtake and community initiatives. So SVML Sovereign have successfully raised $40 million Aus dollars through a strongly supported placement, which I think caught a lot of people unawares. But I think it was a good move to do it, when especially when you look back at where the share price was compared to where it is now. It has dropped off quite a lot in the last kind of month, maybe 6 weeks. And obviously, backed by local institutional investors, obviously Rio, the funds will advance development of the Cassia Rutile Graphite project in Malawi. So very, very good performance, obviously, in the last couple of months, but it has dropped back a bit. I don't know what your guys' thoughts on where we are now, and obviously regarding that raise.
Well, I think
Yeah,
the
you would
big.
have been up significantly, wouldn't you? But now it's effectively down. So yeah,
Well,
it's
if it. Yeah.
well.
If I was going to say, because these are picks for the entire year, they're not for sort of the first few months. I would say that raise, that capital means that they're cashed up into 2027, which means that, in negotiations of selling this asset to Rio Tinto, they're not going to be hamstrung. The risk was, so to the benefits of listeners, when the definitive feasibility study is released in Q4, Rio Tinto has 180 days to decide whether they want to become operator of the project. A major won't want to become an operator without also owning the asset. So basically, you're looking at a buyout or not, roughly by this time next year. So Rio Tinto chose not to participate in this raise because they've got enough, because they believe that Sovereign definitely now has more than enough money to do the feasibility study and then beyond that. And so the only question is really, do you believe that Rio Tinto is going to buy this thing in the next year? I mean, I'm very confident they will. So I'm not concerned that the share price has gone down a bit. I just think it's on sale. For a long-term investor, you're just waiting
I
for
mean,
that
how much of a
premium.
bargain is it now, Charles? I mean, look at the 52-week low is 26 and a half. It's currently trading at 32 and a half pence, and
Oh,
the 52-week high was 48.5. So it is, you could argue, they've had the optimized PFS, which, looks really, really good. The building towards the DFS is now a good time to be looking at Sovereign if it's not on your radar.
We don't give advice here, but I think so. It's my largest position. I think that a year from now, Kassir will be bought at a premium, and that'll be that. I'm just kind of unstressed about it. I think what it is, when it dips, I buy a little bit more, but I'm not really looking at the day to day. I'm looking at that sort of annual thing, and then even if the share price, because what I suspect will happen is that the share price will start rising as we get to Q4. We get that definitive feasibility study, and people start to feel out just what kind of a number Rio Tinto will pay for it. I guess we'll see.
Okay, my fourth and final one is Bazant. They've had some fantastic news. It's up around the 8 to 10% mark, which is ridiculous considering the news. Open Garab license was granted, and also the African Pioneer license was granted within Namibia. So now we're waiting on funding options, I think, in terms of what's going to happen at Open Garab. We've got a company that has free cash flow or will potentially have free cash flow within the next 12 to 18 months of circa $20 to $30 million per annum. They've got a shareholding now, which should be falling their way sometime in June, I think it is, once it's all sorted out with Blackstone Minerals, which is worth more than the market capitalization currently of Bazant. And for me, this is absolute bargain of the century right now. I don't understand why it hasn't gone up considerably more than it is. And yeah, I'm very happy to hold it. And I think by the end of this year, we're going to see a very different share price here.
Yeah, I agree with you on this. I think that all that's holding it back is project level financing, which again, I mean, we talked about this before with somewhere in the region of 12 to 15 million US dollars. And then the payback time on that is probably less than a year with free cash flow. So it's very attractive to a partner. And I think, basically it's on Colin to get the financing sorted. My fourth pick was Jubilee Metals. And basically, I mean, the share price I think is down 5% year to date, but there's a spread. I mean, it's basically flat. It jumps up and down around the sort of 3-ish p mark, just over. And the South African operations operating at sort of record highs. So it's record chrome production. Everything seems to be going very well. And then in Zambia, Sable seems to be running smoothly. And then the issue, what's pushing the share price down, I think there's two issues. The first is Roan, and the fact we've now bought this upgraded material and we're testing it and we're trialing it. It seems these trials have been going on longer than a lot of investors would have hoped. But having said that, as long as it does start producing copper, you start to get, just one good production update out of that plant, the share price should shoot back up. I mean, it's worth noting the share price did go to like a decent profit, no, a decent rise before it came back down again. So the hope is still there. But basically, this is on Leon. This is on company to, prove that these assets that they've bought, possibly paid for in shares, again, possibly depressing the share price, are worth it. And if they are worth it, we should see by the end of the year a recovery, but it all depends on whether these copper assets can be processed and run effectively. And that's your risk.
Yeah, my fourth and final one is Priority Intelligence. Probably the worst performer out of the bunch. Again, we'll talk about that in a minute when I've given, an update on what they've done. But I think they've actually had a very good, news flow since coming to market at the back end of last year. Remember it was a kind of Christmassy New Year listing. They deliver smart tech solutions to the SME sector. I mean, some of the highlights include a strategic partnership with the Funding Circle, which giving businesses using the Priority platform instant access to loans of up to £750,000, and obviously Priority AI would handle the entire application process autonomously. And the company also secured a £100,000 contract with the leading UK charity Leukemia Care to develop an AI-powered information hub, which obviously enhances patient and donor engagement. And also Priority AI, probably this is the most impressive one out of the lot. They were accepted into NVIDIA's Connect program, which will gain access to world-class AI development tools and cost-saving benefits. And all of those kind of moves have demonstrated the company's ambition to become I think they're going to become a leading force in the growth as a service space, combining obviously AI and innovation with real-world impact. So for me, I think the share price has been unfairly beaten down on I don't know the exact ins and outs of it, but there was meant to be a lock in there. And I really strongly believe that their performance has been very good from January in terms of what they've achieved.
So I suppose as the worst performer, would you invest in it now as opposed to when you did invest?
Well, as Charles said, we don't give that sort of advice on here, but I still strongly believe in the company in terms of, going forward in, I think 2025 will still continue, will be a year where they will announce more, partnerships going forward and more clients. I guess the question that's on people's lips is, does the current market cap, or when they came to market, did that current market cap justify the amount of customers, the kind of number of customers, the revenue that they were generating? I don't know what the number was. Was it 30 clients they needed at their kind
Sort
of
of 40
revenue
ones, but
subscription over 40?
but
I
obviously
think that the
they've
market
signed,
doubted.
well, they signed bigger clients. The idea was, smaller clients, lots of them, and they've signed a few bigger ones instead. But then we haven't had, a new client RNS for a while now, and maybe that's, people's concerns. But the share price seems to have settled, I think, and most people are, people who wanted to sell, who could sell, have now sold, and everybody else is now just waiting and waiting for the team to come back with contracts.
Okay, well, that's a good, I think we've done a good roundup of where we are with them. I think,
Yeah,
as Kev said,
just to give everybody the numbers, the overall, we culminate all or accumulate all of them. The overall would have been, if you put 10 grand in each one, the prices that we specified at that time, you'd now have 10% return. So you'd have had 132,000 as opposed to 120,000. So considering what's happened with the market and all the insecurities of the market, that's not a bad return. We've had two companies that will have bagged, which was Greatland Gold and Greenrock. And yeah, we've had probably one really disappointing one in terms of performance. The rest are not that far away. There's been issues with some of them, but we'll see how it all goes towards the end of the year. What we also have said is that we're going to choose one more stock at this point in the year and follow it for the rest of the year. Obviously, markets change, situation changes. We're staying with all the stocks that we have because I don't think anybody wants to change any of those. But yeah, go for it, Phil. You go first.
okay, well, I'm going to add one that we've actually talked about in the past, and we've actually had the chairman on, or the CEO, and that's ImmuPharma, IMM. And they have achieved, now, I don't know whether Kev's laughing because he's probably got that one himself. I hope not, but at least he's given me the first pick. But anyway, achieved a major milestone. They confirmed the unique mechanism of action, the MOA, of its lead autoimmune therapy, P140, through a preclinical study, or new preclinical study conducted in the US. And the evidence confirms that the P140 as non-immunosuppressive, which obviously distinguishes it from existing treatments for conditions like lupus and highlights its potential safety and efficacy. The company is also expanding its IP portfolio based on these findings, which comes as autoimmune therapy markets are forecast to hit $360 billion by 2030. They've also raised 2.91 million pounds recently, or in the last couple of months, million pounds, via placing a new subscription agreement with Lanstead Capital. And the fundraise also include 1.875 pounds million pounds Lanstead deal structured around a share price settlement model, which will give the company potential upside from any, positive price performance over 7 months. And the proceeds from that raise will fund the further investment in the P140 platform. So I think with that streamlined structure, reduced overheads and increasing momentum around the autoimmune and anti-infective portfolio, I think 2025 it could potentially shape up to be a transformational year for ImmuPharma. So that's my addition to the radar stocks.
Okay, I'm going to go with AsiaMet, and we're going to have the optimized feasibility study for BKM is going to come out literally any day now, potentially next week. So for perspective, this is going to be a smaller project than the original feasibility study in order to get financing to build the mine. But the original feasibility study, we had $163 million net present value, a 21% internal rate of return, 3 year payback period with 10 years of copper production. It's fantastic. I mean, the team have done a massive amount of work to produce a new feasibility study, which the banks are going to fund. And then once that's released, talks that have been going on with the banks for, a couple of years now are going to accelerate, and hopefully we'll get a project level financing before the end of the year. And then the mine gets built and everyone makes loads of money. Obviously, all of this hinges on a deal being done.
But I think there's a lot of optimism in the market. And I think that the amount of work that's gone into AgentMet over the years does mean that management are certain what the bankers want, and the bankers are certain what they want out of the asset. And then the other potential flip side of this, once this optimized feasibility study comes out, with copper, bouncing around all over the place, but possibly rising very, very high given the Chinese stockpile issue. It might be that the assets just get sold off very quickly as well, which would be, another win for shareholders. So yeah, AsiaMet, that's my extra one for the year.
Very good. So we have a pharma play and we have a copper play. The one I'm actually going to have for the rest of the year is an interview that you've just heard. So I don't really need to say very much, but I really do think the time is right for Ethereum. And, with the trading now in Rwanda, the opportunist situation in Botswana for the copper belt. And also the Kalahari Copper Belt, I should say, and the opportunity for copper and silver in Morocco. And you've obviously got the ongoing details with Rio Tinto in Rwanda. I just think there's so many catalysts that gives it an opportunity to rise from the low level that it's currently at. So mine is going to be Ethereum.
Very good. Well, that's a nice little roundup of a few there, isn't it? So let's have a quick look at some of the movers and shakers of the week, because there's been a couple that I want to just highlight. That I don't know if you saw this news on Thursday, but the best mover was TrackMate Holdings. They were up some 240% on the news that Brilliant UK Limited, a subsidiary of Constellation, had agreed to acquire TrackMate Holdings in a recommended all-cash deal, valuing the company at 7.76 million, with TrackMate shareholders receiving 9.5 pence per share, represented at the time a 280% premium to the closing price. So what do you make? I mean, it's great to see acquisitions like that just fire, and especially at such a premium to the share price.
I think undervalued assets, particularly in the UK, I think we're going to see more and more of these acquisitions unless things change fairly soon. Do you actually know that Charles Hall from Peel Hunt was actually talking about this on LinkedIn the other day, of saying just, how do we get more investment in the UK markets, more liquidity in the UK markets? And he had some decent suggestions, but basically, if we don't, then we're going to see more and more of this thing happening. So yeah, I mean, obviously for individual investors, great, but for the wider market, it's actually, if it keeps happening, maybe not so good. I guess we'll
Yeah,
see.
absolutely. I mean, the 53.7% of the shareholders, including the directors, have irrevocably backed the deal. So it's not really surprising, is it? But
No.
the other one that was up this week on significant news, and we actually recorded a podcast with them in the week, was BSFA up 140% on the Jurassic Park news release last week. I mean, we haven't really talked about this as a wrap up, but what do you think of that news? I mean, we didn't really expect it, did we? Let's to be fair.
Well, I think we expected there to be a deal of some kind, but I think it's marketing genius, whether it actually is dinosaur leather. Or whether it's, they plug in so much of a DNA that it's not really, doesn't much matter. It's a talking point. And actually, I saw the post on Reddit's Wall Street Bets as well that came up from one of the accounts over there talking about the company. It's the sort of thing that you can just take the market by imagination. And when your market cap is so low, you do just have to go do something a little bit zany, a little bit out there to see, can we actually generate some sales? And if they do start creating these, T-Rex leather bags, belts, whatever, in Q4 this year, then maybe you get some decent revenue out of it, and exciting things might happen.
Yeah, I think the more important thing is that I think it will prove a concept, which they already have, to be honest. But this obviously from a PR perspective, I think it's WPP
Yeah, the subsidiary of it, yeah.
that basically is covering it. And this is a multi-£1 billion US company, I think. And so yeah, I think they want this to work. And that means value probably will be created at that level. That is going to dramatically change the share price of BSFA. Don't forget, BSFA was in the 20 pence region, a couple of years ago, and now it's in the what 3p region. So
Yeah.
company fundamentally hasn't changed. It was all about meat before. Now it's going to be all about the corneas and the leather. Potentially, I think that's a much more, how can I put it, reasonable way that they're going to make money, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the meat was one of those things that was either going to work or wasn't going to work, and still could work, especially as they have this scaffold-free meat. I mean, I've tried this stuff, I've eaten it, and I'm still alive.
Well, I think the meat thing, basically, it requires lower interest rates. It requires because when you create, whether it's, fake meat or artificial meat or lab grown meat, it's quite expensive to make. It's quite expensive to put on supermarket shelves. It's expensive to do brand partnerships, and so you need to have a situation where companies have money to lend and do partnerships, BSA, to put them on the shelves. But also consumers are prepared to pay the money, and at the moment, people's belts are a lot tightened. Versus going, so you're going after the everyday market with the meat market versus the leather market, who's buying a dinosaur leather handbag? They're people who are not affected by the day-to-day economy recession. They've got money. So it's
Yeah, and one of the things that there was three companies I was thinking of adding in terms of mine. One was Aterian, two was BSFA, and the third one was actually Eastar Resources. That I think Eastar Resources is going to come good over the next period of time with copper and Vancouver, the Vancouver asset, which has been extended, and then the Snowy asset, which is going to have, looks like it's a big gold discovery. So yeah, there are plenty of opportunities out there. I mean, throw some names out, guys, that you didn't choose. What else are you thinking about?
Oh, throwing out names. The problem is, there's so many companies that just need that one transformative deal, and then it'll just fly. This is the problem. It's really tricky when you're sort of because the bigger companies are like Sovereign, like Greatland, like Amaroq. They'll come good in the end, even if the share price bounces up or down. But you've got companies, Apex, Asian Met, but like Avian Metals, for example, and their iron ore asset out in Australia. That could come good this year. Blencow and their graphite, the Iron Cross deposit. The share price has come down a lot, and yet they just signed a MOU letter with the African Finance Corporation. I mean, you picked Bazant, but like Energy Pathways is another one. They just want the government to get out of their way and give them permission to do things, and then they can go, sort it out. I mean, did you read that newspaper article that Ben put out? He literally said, "We don't want any government money. We just want you to just get out of our way and let us do things." And then like Guardian, Guardian's one of mine is already, but a lot of it, get mining, get going at Ten Pyute. It's not just grant funding for Pilot Mountain, it's just get mining. So a lot of it is, just there's so many where it's like a deal, get a financing.
You've got a deal also with I think when Bazant finally gets its funding, you're going to see African Pioneer also probably
Yeah,
loom.
both assets are in Namibia,
Yeah,
aren't they?
you've also got some fantastic news from Extract
Or
Resources in
Silver
terms of
King, yeah.
Silver
Those
King.
grades are amazing. I mean, we spoke to Colin about them, didn't we? And then new ones came out today as well, which expanded it. Yeah. There is one that what I think another one on the radar. There's a few. There's Arc Minerals, obviously. But we're waiting for news to come from that front. But $21 million going into the ground by the end of December next year. That's gotta be attractive at this share price. And the other one I think quite interesting is Helix Exploration. It's come down to around 15p. There's clearly been a seller, but at risk of killing a fairy, we believe the seller is out. But generally, if you ha were hoping,
Famous last words.
that's the thing, isn't it? I don't want to say it because it's always. But basically, I mean, if they get there, they've got their drilling Linda. Well, they've drilled Linda, and they're doing flow testing now. So if that
Is
third
so
well,
wrong. That is such a wrong statement. The drilling Linda.
they're drilling Linda. Well, I said to the guys out there that they name the wells after like different names. It's like the Great Escape. We've got three wells and three. But anyway, they're drilling
Poor
it.
Linda.
If it's successful and they're hoping to make $4 million of revenue from each well, if you're making $12 million of revenue and they're hoping to put 20 wells on the field, then suddenly you could make a massive amount of money. I mean, I did the maths elsewhere, but basically it's one of those ones where, they're planning on going into production in the summer. We're almost there. And then suddenly you might see a huge uplift.
Yeah, well,
I'm hoping so.
let's hope they're not plugging Linda's holes and
No, we don't want to plug Linda's holes. We
I mean,
want Linda to release the gas in the
yeah,
axe. That's what we
exactly.
want to see.
We want Linda to be a gusher, basically, is what we
Yeah,
want.
we do. We do. We do.
Yeah.
You know, I
So, I
think
mean,
that's.
let's have a look at the shakers, because we were talking movers and shakers, and somehow we got
We
choosing
got
another
side. We Kev
fucking
sidetracked us
stocks.
with some
Yeah.
nonsense,
So,
didn't he?
Myriad, I don't know if you saw this one, Myriad Advertising were down 90% on the news that the advanced takeover discussions have ended without a deal, which obviously leaves the company urgently seeking alternative funding options. I think they had a cash balance of about 2.7 million as of March 2025, but they had a big cash burn monthly ratio, a monthly amount of to 650 to 675 thousand, and the board have warned without any cash injection, the obviously administration may be unavoidable. So they obviously dropped 90% on the week. Not, things not looking good for Myriad Advertising. Shares in which supermarket slash retailer dropped 7% this week, which wiped nearly 700 million pounds off the market value. Anyone want to hazard a guess?
I
Marks
mean,
and of retail outlets, supermarkets. One of them started with Marks and Spencer. This scattered spider group have crippled the online orders and disrupted store operations. Then, for later in the week, Co-op also faced a cyber attack, prompting it to shut down part of its IT network. And then later in the week, I don't know if you saw this, but Harrods confirmed that all its physical stores and online. Yeah, I mean so
yeah,
first
they
question
wouldn't
is,
it even.
who is this scattered spider group who are crippling these online retailers and supermarkets? And what is the motive, do we think?
Money. Well, the motive is money, and let's,
Ransomware, ransom.
you pay us money and we'll let you have your website back. Yeah, ransomware. And obviously, if you say, right, we want $4 million, the temptation is just to pay if you're a multi-billion-dollar company, but then they'll come back with a bigger demand later on. There's always the way. But there's two lessons here, in my opinion. The first is that larger companies, like I work for a few larger companies, and I have done throughout my career, and so many of them underinvest in cybersecurity. It's terrifying. It's terrifying how many documents are literally unlocked and publicly available if you know what you're doing. But they should be spending significantly more. And basically, if the reward for cybercrime is significantly higher than working in cybersecurity, then the best people are going to be in cybercrime and not cybersecurity. But then also, I mean, we had the blackouts across half of Western Europe, Spain, Portugal, parts of France, complete electricity blackouts for hours and hours last week.
Yes.
And so, for me, the bigger question is, okay, we have moved into a world, a modern world, where everything runs relies on the internet and everyone relies on electricity. What happens when electric and internet go down, for example, in a war situation? How do Western democracies cope? Actually, not very well.
Yes.
And that's just Marks and Spencer, and it's a couple of shops. I mean, to the individual companies, it's a disaster. To the general economy, it's fine. What happens if you have an internet attack that takes down the gov.uk website, for example, or the HMRC website, and no one can pay any tax?
Yeah, maybe they'll operate better.
Oh, I think it'd be fantastic. But, to be no. The gov.uk website is actually possibly the only good thing the
Yeah,
government
the
has ever
government
done.
gateway, and also that they're saying that NHS app has actually helped improve it's reduced waiting times, it's reduced operating. So actually, some of this tech is doing a world of good.
I think so, but I do think we are so over-reliant on internet technology, electricity, that's obviously I think we should be reliant on it because we progress as a society, but the fact we don't have backup systems is it's okay, you think you'd be able to pay with cash in Spain, but all the tills are electrically operated.
Yes,
You know?
exactly.
Yeah.
Can't open
You
the
think,
till.
oh, my Bitcoin's worth loads of money. Hang on, there's no electricity.
Yeah, can't access the
But,
wallet.
and then like people are like, oh, my gold is really valuable. It's like, yeah, what did you do? Did you go down to the shop and buy a bit of gold off your bar and hand it over for your groceries? No, you didn't. So we need significantly more
That's why you need silver coins, mate.
silver
That's
coin. Did you
gonna
walk
work.
over? Like, this is silver, I promise. And there's six more
There's a
times.
silver coin.
Yeah.
That's gonna work. We're gonna go
Okay.
back. We're gonna go back to the silver coin, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, my sister works in a restaurant up in Cheltenham, and she's only 20, so she's deciding what she wants to do with her life. But they had the internet went down in the centre of Cheltenham a couple of months ago, only for like 3 hours or so. So nobody could pay with card. And then because they couldn't go to the ATM to take cash out, no one could take cash out either. And then it used to be that you used to be able to take card details and then put it through later, but because of GDPR, you're not allowed to do that anymore either. There was 100 people odd in the restaurant and they all just left. And there was nothing they could do because they couldn't
There's
even take
nothing
their
you can do about
details.
it if you can't take the payment. It's
No,
not
I
your
know,
problem, is it?
but it's scary, isn't it? It's
It
like
is.
we make all our money on the internet, whether that's through trading or through doing podcasts or whatever. Imagine the internet went down tomorrow. We guys, I might be able to find Phil, but Ked's somewhere in Egypt. But we'll never find him. He'll be lost forever.
You'd be lost forever.
Yeah,
Although I think,
I think that wouldn't be a sad thing, to be honest.
yeah.
I think having been in the mountains of Lebanon for a week, away from telephone, away from any internet, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was beautiful to be away from it for a while, and I think we should all detox at some point.
Yeah, I think
But
it's.
we do need we do need it. This is the
Yes,
problem, isn't it? It's become a
definitely.
necessity. And yeah, we wouldn't have this podcast. People wouldn't be able to listen to it without the internet. And how many other businesses are now absolutely 100% reliant on the internet? There aren't many businesses that aren't.
No,
Maybe we have
absolutely.
to have a no internet Friday rule. Just we cut it off the whole country on Friday, apart from emergency services. Problem solved. And then maybe people get more used to it. But the thing is you when like I've got young children, I know you do as well, Kev. I mean, Phil, for your kids are a bit older, aren't they? But like I watch my 11-year-old doesn't have a smartphone, right? He's the only one in his class who doesn't. And you know, he'll probably get one next year because I feel like the prep like you kind of, you know, otherwise he'll be socially ostracized. But it's kind of scary how much of a time little children spending their lives on their phones, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and we wonder why more and more are
Big
having
problems.
mental problems. But
Yeah,
anyway,
it's
on this
terrible.
really happy note,
Are we
on
doing movers and shakers still? I
No,
think.
we've
No.
finished the movers and
Oh, we
shakers. We
finished
want to
that bit.
congratulate Kev
Let's finish
on
on
Liverpool.
something happy. Yes, I didn't even think about that. But yes, we won the league. You'll never walk alone. We ran away with it in the end. Let's see what happens the last four games. But yeah, and it's been very good to see both Tottenham and United do well in the Europa League on Thursday night. Arsenal not so good against PSG. I think they're going to really struggle in Paris, but we will see.
You know what you want to see, having won the league and still have a few games left over? You want to
Yeah.
see some of the young blood allowed a bit of time on the pitch, you know? Because you
Yeah.
will, you know, give them their time, give them the go, because there's no risk
Yeah.
to it. I think
Yeah.
it's
We'll
worth it.
see. We'll see. I'm not sure Slot's that way inclined.
Well,
I
I don't
basically will want
either,
to.
but
I think he wants to win the last four games, and
he
he's going
wants
to
to
go
win
out
them
and try
all.
and do it.
And then we've
Yeah.
got the Formula One in Miami this weekend as well coming up, which is an interesting season. Obviously, Ferrari are still struggling. Hamilton's still trying to find his feet in that car. Oscar Piastri is looking absolutely dominant in the McLaren. Obviously, it's still early days in the season, and Max Verstappen could still, you know, come back in his in the Red Bull. He's still an absolutely amazing driver, but it's very interesting just seeing how much far ahead McLaren are in terms of the Constructor Series. So, really, really interesting season that one. And Miami's always a very good race. What else have we got? We've got the. We didn't talk about the golf, Kev. You were away that week. What about McIlroy's win? I mean, what an amazing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
wow. Wow, he looked like he was going to choke again and then he didn't.
Yeah. You could see the pressure of years of pressure just
Ah, the
wash off his
pressure, the
shoulders.
pressure, the pressure, the
That's why he
pressure.
was
It
like
was
3 inches taller
immense.
walking off.
Yeah, no, the pressure that he put himself under. I mean, he had it in the bag and a par on the last and he would have won it. And then he missed that putt and it wasn't really that difficult to putt. So, it was like, am I going to choke again? Am I going to choke again?
Yeah,
And
but
then
come
they,
on. You want that entertainment factor, don't you? It was
well, yes.
enjoyable to watch. Come on.
But
It just
then
shows, you
his
know.
performance on the 18th in the playoff, he
Amazing.
hit a cracking drive. He knocked it to 2 or 3 feet and he held a putt. That was like, that really was like grit.
What does it say as a message though, you know, about building and working so hard for the dream to be able to get that triple? And then, you know, to win all of those major Grand Slams, which is probably, you know, is well, he
Four
got
of them,
four, he
not
got four
triple.
of them, yeah, but he got
Yeah.
four, didn't he? He had the triple, he got four, but I mean, like, to be able to be and given that the, you know, the green jacket, and then become a member of the elite who've done the four, like, how long was it before since his last big win, his last big Grand Slam?
Well,
And most people.
he's been trying to win the Masters now for I think it's 11 years.
That's what I mean. So, like, to never give up and to have that tenacity to keep going. I think he didn't he do a speech where he referenced his daughter and he said, like, you know, I want you to see this, that show that you should never give up on a dream. I think it was phenomenal.
Yeah, it was good. Definitely a major expression of emotions. I mean, he's actually become a bit of a love-hate character as well because of the LIV Golf thing. And LIV Golf this weekend is in South Korea, which again is trying to spread the game of golf around the world, you know. And whereas the Americans have tried to make it so American-centric that finally this LIV Golf has busted it out of America, I think. And how many more things, because of the way Trump has behaved, are going to get busted out of America? You know, that it's not all going to be American-centric. You know, we talked off about the fact that I think the US is in recession, whether we like it or not, and it's going to get worse because many of the countries in the world are saying, press pause. We don't know what to do here.
Okay, well, just TV, all I'll say is just got to watch Mobland on Paramount Plus. It's got to be one of the best London-based gangster mafia kind of, like, it's just brilliant. So Mobland, Tom Hardy, Pierce Brosnan, Helen Mirren. If you like your layer cake Guy Ritchie stuff, then take a watch on that. But thank you all for listening. It's been a bit of a long marathon this weekend. We've obviously got the bank holiday weekend, haven't we? The Monday, so markets closed on Monday. Everybody, please take some downtime, as Kev just said. You know, switch your phones off, spend some time with the loved ones, tell them how much you love them, and have a great weekend all. Please do subscribe, hit the bell icon for further notifications of future episodes, and have a great weekend all.
Yeah, and my lobster's trying to kill one of my fish in the tank. So there you go. He doesn't
That's a
have it. He
fantastic
doesn't
sign off.
have the internet.
See you later.
See you later, alligator.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.